For a couple of years, we are now moving down into implementation down the streets, neighborhoods. So we've been sort of head in the clouds, we're back feet on the ground. And we haven't wasted any time getting started. In fact, as you already know, we have several sort of parallel projects underway, a draft code for mixed-use zones, a new draft code for institutional zones, a draft code for the new central city plan. Those three projects are starting to move through the Planning and Sustainability Commission right now, and they'll come to you one after another in the next several months. Also moving along is the residential infill project, which I'll mention in a few minutes. And then starting this summer, we will begin three new major projects: the multifamily zoning code project, which we're doing with a grant from Metro, a work on community design standards in the design review process, and then some code refinements for 82nd Avenue, working closely with the Housing Bureau and PDC. Again, that one is funded by Metro. We also always have a handful of other, sometimes several handfuls of other small projects, from Northwest Parking District to, I don't know that this is going to be small, but inclusionary zoning. Things pop up consistently throughout the year as one-time projects, and those are other things that we are moving into doing a whole lot more than doing the big picture plans. That's not to mention all of the things that are going on with sustainability, energy efficiency, solar, green building, making sure the trash and the recycling and the composting gets picked up. We do a very efficient job in the city. Under BPS management, rates have been flat and or reduced over the past 3 or 4 years, and I don't know any electric, gas, water, sewer utility that can say that. So I think we're doing a good job in a partnership with the local solid waste companies. Instead of walking through each one of the cuts and add packages that are there, I thought that I'd just focus on a few. Overall, for our budget, if you look at the page that has the big pie chart like this, you can see where our funding comes from. About half of our funds come from general fund, a large portion from the solid waste management fund, and then the rest from grants and contracts and one-time general fund. On the flip side of that page, there is sort of a history of our funding, both from FTE perspective and from where general fund resources came from. You can see back 6 or 7 years ago during the recession, we had to lay off more than 25 planning positions that were eliminated over a couple of years, because in the past, as much as $3 or $4 million in one-time annual funds were used to fund the planning, the old Planning Bureau. We now have about 10 to 15% of our positions still funded on one-time and or grant or interagency kind of fundings that are very volatile. So let me go through a couple of our requests, starting with our first ad package, and that one is called the Single Dwelling Development Code Project. You all probably know it as the Residential Infill Project. We have requested $360,000 in one-time funding. After more discussion with the Budget Advisory Committee, with some of you and in the community, my proposal is actually to shift that from general fund to from one-time general fund to ongoing. And there's several reasons for that. Each year, as I just mentioned, we come in with a priority project from City Council, and it's often $300,000 or $400,000. It might be as much as $700,000 or $800,000, then we have to come back again the next year and the next year and the next year. And it's a very volatile way for us to run our department. We have had staff in recent years, the past 2 years, leave because they have been literally every year in December. They get notice because of either they're one of the lower, younger, often minority employees who have been more recently hired, and they are given notice in December and have to wait until May or June to find out if they still have a job. And so some of those folks have left in the past couple of years. It wasn't a big deal in the recession because there was nowhere to go, but now there are jobs out there, and we're beginning to lose some of those folks. And we have great staff, and so they get hired pretty easily. So I kind of want to get off that roller coaster if possible. Another decision package that you have in front of you is for $175,000 for the comprehensive plan. This is a really good example of a true one-time expense. It includes all the public noticing, the staffing for the hotline, funds for PBOT to finish up the last bits of the TSP to get the entire comp plan done. And then the third request I want to mention is called Community Design Standards and Design Review, the Design Overlay Zone Assessment Project. This request is currently listed for one-time general fund. That does make sense, but I think a stronger case can be made for funding the project using BDS land use fees, similar to how RECAP is funded. It's totally appropriate to use land use fees to cover the cost for ongoing code development, for refinement, and for code improvement projects. And then the fourth item that I just want to mention is our cut package. You requested nearly $400,000 in cuts. We need our demographer that's in there. That person works closely with Andrew's team, with OMF, with a lot of others, and providing good base information. We need staff for the Central City Plan. If you are going to look at taking one of those cuts, I would say that the least harmful cut at this point would be to eliminate one FTE that works on transportation, affordable housing, land use connections around Barber, the Barber project, and the Powell Division project. And again, that's because that position is vacant because that person went to work for Fred Miller and moved over to OMF because she was one of those people that was year after year being kind of tossed about, and she wasn't feeling that valued because we couldn't keep her in that position. She would have rather stayed. I think I'll wrap up just by saying my priorities in terms of requests are, don't take our cuts if possible. If you need to take one, take the FTE that's already vacant. Shift our request for $360,000 in one-time funding to ongoing. Think about inclusionary zoning as part of that, too. We may need to up that a little bit. And then fund the completion of the comprehensive plan. I think that's it. That I'll stop there and then let Linda say a few words and then answer questions. Thank you.
Thank you, Mayor Hills and commissioners and budget committee members. I'm Linda Nedekoven, speaking on behalf of the BPS Budget Advisory Committee, and I'll probably be emphasizing a number of the points that Susan made, but this is coming from the community side of the equation. First, a little bit about the BAC. We have expertise in that group on anti-displacement strategies, public health, sustainable development, transportation planning, a real range of backgrounds and professional connections, and these are folks that are very knowledgeable about the affordable housing crisis, care about it very much, and are looking for solutions. I want to say that as preface to my first comment, which is to say that the BAC recommends that you don't take any of the nearly $400,000 in cuts that we identified. We really want to emphasize the things that Susan has said about stable funding. A number of us have been on the committee for several years and have watched that roller coaster in effect. The Bureau's been consistently relying on one-time funds for as many as 10 positions each year. And if we truly care about affordable housing, we need to make sure that projects which help plan for more housing overall continue to be funded. Affordable housing isn't just about the money to build more units, as important as that is, but we also need a comprehensive approach to make sure that the planning framework is solid, so there's more supply overall and for many years to come, and planning plays an integral role in this. Second, we recommend, as Susan mentioned, that you shift from general fund to using revenue from BDS land use fees to pay for ongoing code refinement and improvement projects. Think of things like the RECAP, the Regulatory Improvement Code Amendment Package, for those of you who never remember what it stands for, like me. The design standards update, which is, woefully late in coming. This should have been done years ago, and other code-related projects. Third, please provide funding to finish the two projects that are currently underway, residential infill and the comprehensive plan. These are both essential, and we've tried to work with the Bureau as closely as we could to ensure that the budgets for these two are reasonable. Finally, again, please seek ways to provide some additional ongoing funding either through allocation of additional general funds or through the appropriate use of BDS land use fees for code-related kinds of improvements. I just really want to emphasize again, having watched this over several years, that we can't afford to go around losing qualified staff. A lot of our equity work, if nothing else, depends on relationships. And when you have folks that end up leaving because they can get a more secure position in another bureau, another jurisdiction, or in the private sector, you also not only lose that expertise, but you lose those valuable relationships. So there has to be a better way to fund our planning bureau, planning and sustainability bureau. Thank you very much.
Can I just add two quick points? One is I handed out our strategic plan, slim as it is, and on the back two pages in the end, you can see our top 12 initiatives for the 3 years. We're 2 years in, and most of those have been done. And so I just feel really good about we are a planning organization. We are a strategic planning organization, and very much laying out exactly what we're going to do. And in general, we're delivering. And then the second item that Linda also just mentioned is that 4 years ago, I stopped and looked at our organization and felt the need to hire an equity person who could focus on the work. We're in the community so much, and what we do affects all the people in the community, and we are not going to reach our sustainability goals. We're not going to reach our planning and other livability goals unless everyone is part of that equation. And so I actually switched a planner position to the equity position 4 years ago. And I know since then people have come in the different bureaus and asked as a one-time on or as an ongoing funding for a new position for that. And we embedded that position early. And so I just think that's important. Thanks.
Sure. Hello again, Jessica Kennard, the City Budget Office. I'm going to briefly just walk through City Budget Office's recommendations. So we recommended partially funding the completion of the Single Dwelling Development Code project, which is the continuation of the residential infill project from last year, the current year. In the current year, BPS received a little over $482,000. At the time that this was proposed, it was estimated that this project would continue into 16-17 and that it would require roughly an additional $100,000 to be completed. So CBO recommendations is to continue funding this project as it was originally scoped. This does leave the Bureau with a shortfall of approximately $260,000 because the scope of the project has changed since the original, since the project began. We recommended funding the majority of the completion of the new comprehensive plan package. We recommend $125,000, which was largely for materials and services and customer service related to the sending of public notices for zoning code changes. We did not recommend the 0.5 staff position, which was it's one-time support to continue funding a limited-term community outreach and information representative. This is a position that was in the Bureau's budget last year, and because they anticipated completing the project a little bit sooner, had decided to reprioritize funds internally away from that position. So to the extent that this is deemed a priority this year, CBO recommended that the Bureau reprioritize funding for that position. In terms of the general fund reductions, we're recommending for the positions that the Bureau listed related to the Central City 2035 plan and the Transit Corridor plan, we're recommending one-time reduction of these positions. Both of these positions are currently vacant, so they wouldn't result in layoffs. And in recognition of the Bureau's need to continue the funding, continue that stable level of ongoing funding to support ongoing operations, we recommend reducing the Bureau by these positions just for 16-17 and then reinstating them as ongoing in subsequent budget years. This has an effect of freeing up some general fund resources both for Bureau priorities and citywide priorities while hopefully not harming the need for the Bureau's ongoing support for FTE. We do not recommend the reduction, the position reduction for the demographic and housing research position. We think that this is actually an extremely critical position to not just planning's operations, but the city as a whole as we look strategically towards the services that we're providing towards all communities and particularly underrepresented communities. And as Director Anderson mentioned, many bureaus have utilized the services of this position, and it's helped inform a lot of, I think, decisions around serving underrepresented communities. And we are recommending the reduction for the sustainability programs. Happy to go into any of our recommendations more if you have additional questions.
I have a comment, and that is that this, you know, I'm glad that we had this presentation the same morning as we had the housing presentation, because clearly we're seeing people living outside and hearing from a lot of people losing their homes, and that's a very compelling case. This bureau is one where it doesn't do very well in the city budget office's recommendations, and I understand why. I know from looking both at the planning bureau and at parks, the challenge is these staff positions and the work is not so visible, and yet it's vital for doing things like getting grants and for addressing a lot of the other questions that we, the council, want solved, and the issues like the design and such. So it's one that we have, again, cobbled together over the last 8 years, 7 years with one-time funding. And to me, it's one of several bureaus that does fantastic work. I mean, the work you've done on the comprehensive plan, I just can't even express how impressed I am with how well the staff have done on that. Joe and your team have been just phenomenal, and we're planning to get it done by the end of this year. In fact, well before the end of this year, as with the info project. So we should be rewarding good work that's been done, and maybe we can't do it this year with ongoing money. If there is new ongoing money in the April forecast, I agree with Susan's assertion that if we could just bolster the base budget in this bureau and a couple of others, that we could start getting ahead of the game. So thank you very much for the work that you do, and I, for one, am hoping that we do fund staffing positions in addition to looking at some of the infrastructure things that we have to do.
Okay. Other questions? Steve, please.
I second what Commissioner Fritz said. Just wanted to comment that PBOT is very supportive of the Smart Cities Coordination Proposal. That might go without saying, but it's worth saying. And it seems to me that the Residential Infill Project is taking on really important issues, doing really important work. So I don't know if I'm qualified to say whether the number should be precisely 361,000 or whatever it is, but I'd be hesitant to give that project less than the support that it needs.
So I raised a question earlier, Susan, to just maybe get you to comment a little bit on it. In our discussion about housing and about inclusionary zoning, do we have the staff and consulting resources at hand at both the Planning Bureau and the Housing Bureau to assure that we get the comp plan right with respect to the new window that's opened for both requiring inclusionary housing and conferring a sufficient density benefit that it meets the statute's requirement that we provide a betterment in exchange for requiring less than 80% or requiring housing that reaches the community that makes less than 80% of MFI?
So in the comprehensive plan now, there is definitely policy direction in there that would cover all of this. So I'm feeling very confident that we do not need to go back and make substantial changes to the comprehensive plan. In terms of implementation and making sure we're already working hand in hand, I met yesterday for coffee with Kurt for, you know, half an hour, you know, who's doing what on inclusionary zoning. And the other pieces that go around that, and it will be a team effort. We do not have the resources right now. Joe's doing it at night. You know, it's not. He was texting me last night, going, "What are we doing with this?" You know, and so it's again one of those examples. I think you would all agree that we're a really responsive agency, and so we want to get the work done, and we've been waiting for years to do some of this work. And so we are ready to go do it. But at some point, for example, for that project and others as they come through, whether it's Northwest Parking or whatever, what we end up doing is pulling off bits and pieces of people and either burning them out. And if those people happen to be the ones that are one-time funded, They can't, you know, they want to stay, but they don't. So I think we're okay on a policy perspective on that question.
Related to this housing conversation, it seems to me there's three tools that the city has. We have publicly funded housing, which we talked to Kurt about this morning. We have publicly incentivized housing, which we're talking about in terms of these zoning overlays. And then we have the restrictions that we put on just market rate housing, which really falls a lot into your bureau. Also BDS, and we can maybe ask the same question to them later on today. But are we as a city doing enough when it comes to looking at cost-benefit analysis of what it costs to do market rate housing? Because, I mean, if we had 10,000, 20,000, 30,000 more units tomorrow, housing would be a lot cheaper in the city. And it doesn't matter if those units don't have to be affordable. They could be market or even luxury rate housing, but just the supply and demand would play a factor. When we talk about the comp plan, have we used that lens to sort of look at that? Because we do a lot of things in the city of Portland to make the city more livable, and that's been our sort of mantra for decades, and we're living in this wonderful city as a result. But some of those livability requirements also decrease affordability. Has that cost-benefit analysis been done for the comp plan, and are there any efforts going forward to sort of say, what can we do to reduce the cost of just housing in general, of building housing in general, to make it easier and therefore cheaper?
So two answers right away. One is our job is to get the rules right so that we can make sure that we can indeed build as much housing as possible, but do it in a way that promotes livability and balances with all of our other goals. And that's what we're doing in the comprehensive plan. That's what we're doing in the central city plan and more explicitly in the mixed-use zoning code when we're actually writing the code. And so I feel like we're doing a really good job comparatively, especially to other West Coast cities, in terms of making sure we get the rules right and doing that hopefully in an expeditious manner over the next year or two so that people know what the rules are and that development can go forward. When you look at the price of any new development, you're looking at the price of the structure, and then you add on SDCs and you add on potentially now an affordability, affordable housing sort of, not linkage, but the inclusionary zoning sort of piece. We're looking at, there's a stack of costs that go into doing that. And it does make sense to look at all of those as a part of how, and I think BDS, I think we're less involved in that than BDS is a part of that, and the other bureaus, the infrastructure bureaus. Lower income and more affordable housing, especially 60% and below, is not predominantly in the city new publicly funded housing. It's older housing. It's just, or more people fitting, it's, a family of seven fitting in a two-bedroom apartment. That's what our, and in most cities in the U.S. and around the world, that's how we do, the more affordable housing. So it's absolutely imperative that we do what you were talking about this morning, but it's absolutely imperative that we grow the pie, that we are able to, in a livable manner, build more housing, and I think you're right on in that.
I want to comment on that question because intuitively, yes, it's supply and demand. The challenge is there isn't a finite amount of demand, that we have lots of people coming from California who are selling their tiny little studios and buying McMansions here. 95% of our new units last year were luxury, and they're still flying out the door. So I don't think it's as simple as if we just build more and if we lower our standards so that we can build more. I think Susan I agree with Susan's analysis that what we really need to do is think about how do we preserve existing housing, how do we divide it up so that more families can live in a big old home, and that's part of what the Planning Bureau is working on.
Yeah, and the only thing I would say, and I'm coming at it much more from sort of the economic perspective, you're right, there is absolutely more demand, but more supply would help with that. And often what we hear from the community is this frustration, although they tore down a $300,000 house and put up two $500,000 houses, thus making the community less affordable. That's absolutely false. Putting up two of $500,000 houses is actually adding to the housing supply, and those people who wanted to live in Portland, whether they're Intel workers or people from California, would be buying $500,000 or $400,000 houses or $300,000 houses if those aren't available. And so, I mean, I think that overall, and it's only one solution, there's publicly incentivized and publicly subsidized housing as well. But I feel like, and maybe I'm channeling my inner Fred Miller here, there's not we as a city, I know.
We're going to pause for an intervention.
We as a city, I don't think we talk about this quite as much in terms of the costs we put on housing to make the city more livable, also in some cases make it less affordable. And all I'm saying is I think as a city we need to make sure that planning and BDS and Housing Bureau, that we're all doing that cost-benefit analysis so that you all, when you're making that decision, can be very aware of whether it's going to drive up costs or not.
I can't resist, because this is an interesting discussion, but just to Amanda's point, 20 years ago, someone came into my neighborhood in Portland and broke the $200,000 barrier on the purchase price of a house, the Grant Park area, and that was me. And a lot of people in my neighborhood thought we had overpaid for a house. 20 years ago, $200,000 was sort of that sort of Maginot line. Today, the market price for a bungalow in my neighborhood is between $700,000 and $750,000. I would respectfully say to some of my friends in the building, in the development community, that is not just the result of SDCs and fees. It's the market. And the problem that we have as a city is the one factor we don't control in housing is called the market. Dan can boost production to 5,000 new homes tomorrow. If we hit a recession, we're not going to keep pace. Your question about affordable housing, you know, look at the money we've spent. What do we have to show for it? Well, only about 13,000 people who've gone from the streets to homes. But we did that during the worst recession in our lifetime. If I told you that during the Depression we could keep 13,000 people from being on the streets, you'd say that's a huge success. Instead, what we say is, well, there's still homeless people, so have we invested wisely? It does, in almost every regard, go back to something we have no control over, which is market forces. And I do think that, to Amanda's point, we are starting to hear this siren call that if we lower standards, lower fees, and cut red tape, and we support some red tape cutting, but just across the board, which our developer friends have been advocating always, consistently, that somehow we'll solve the affordable housing crisis. I'm not sure that's true. I'm not sure that doesn't just result in a larger premium on the sale of a house, but the market sets the price. And as long as people are coming, as Steve likes to say, as long as people with a lot of money are willing to come in and overpay in desirable neighborhoods, the market is setting the barrier. Yes, we want a rational cost system. Yes, we want to think about, but at the end of the day, I'm not sure we make a big dent here unless we make a massive investment in social housing. And that's been the experience across the globe. Unless we invest in a permanently affordable stock of social housing, I don't think relying on the vagaries of the market is a particularly good strategy for digging out of this hole. That's just my two cents.
Good discussion. Let's steer back to the Planning Bureau budget for a couple more minutes and then move on.
I just want to make a comment to planning and sustainability that David Douglas has been very pleased with the extra effort your planners have gone in and working with us because of our capacity issues. Unfortunately, back in 96, they changed a lot of zoning that had a lot of unintended consequences. So we're really pleased, and your East Portland liaison, can I say names? Chris Garzello has been wonderful to work with. If I have an issue or a question, because I get a lot of the community come to me with a question, is her response is so quick that I can either refer them on to someone in your bureau or another bureau or whatever. But we as a school district that comprise a large majority of East Portland are really appreciative of you looking at the displacement issue, the affordable housing issue, and our school capacity issue, and looking at that in relationship to the comp plan. I do want to make a kind of a comment about you saying housing prices. East Portland's supposed to be low income, low housing prices. I saw one in Cherry Park, which is just east of 205, that was listed for $400,000. So that gentrification is creeping very rapidly. I know my own house went down with the market, and now it's up and above what it was when the market went down, and I'm way out on 135. So it's the market is causing our prices to go up.
So I want to thank Susan and her team. Just a quick comment for me. Susan's proposal to use fees to support some of the code-related planning work is something that I want us to give careful consideration to. I think it's always problematic in our collective management of our bureaus that sometimes we end up punishing good behavior. And Susan has been particularly assiduous and creative in coming up with grants and outside funding for what the Planning Bureau does, which then makes some of their staff and programs more vulnerable in the budget process. And so, in effect, we've been punishing her as a manager for being particularly helpful to the city in bringing in new resources. So I'm very sensitive to that point. I just want to say we're going to take a very close look at that proposal. Thank you for putting it on the table. I think we all appreciate the fact that you have been so creative. You and your whole team have been creative in coming up with, whether it's Metro grants or other ways to augment what we do without necessarily calling on the general fund at every term. So credit for good work. We'll try to have it actually show up in dollars someday, maybe this year. Thank you. Let's move on, please, to Oney. And we have some Budget Advisory Committee members here, as well as Amalia and her team. Good morning.
Good morning.
Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Commissioners. ONI's mission is to promote a culture of civic engagement by connecting and supporting all Portlanders working together and with government to build inclusive, safe, and livable neighborhoods and communities. For us, expanded civic engagement supports greater equity in decision-making and service delivery. ONI's total-based budget approximately is $9.3 million. Over half of our budget lies in our most core program area, which is civic engagement and leadership development programs, and those focus on increasing the number and diversity of people involved in civic governance. In the past, ONI and our BAC have always considered the budget climate when developing our requested budget, and we've been very conservative in our asks. This year, our ask is larger than in past years, and the reason for that is that our BAC decided it was a priority to begin to let council know the direction in which we're going and where our priority growth areas are. We understand that in the current budget climate, we're not expecting that all of our requests will be funded, but we wanted to begin to let you know which way we're going. ONI has grown substantially over the past several years with the addition of some programs. While positive, the new program additions always also have placed a strain on very limited administration that hasn't grown with the volume and complexity of the work. Our new programs are noise control, marijuana licensing. The new Portlander program was transferred over and expanded to our bureau. Youth Commission, the Multnomah Youth Commission, the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program was expanded this year as well to add an additional partner, and the East Portland Action Plan was added to our budget. ONI's programs leverage a substantial amount of resources in terms of volunteer hours. Conservative estimates have it at $7 to $8 million annually that is leveraged by the investment that we make in volunteer work at the community level. We are once again proud of our BAC process. It involves 64 people in representing organizations and communities. I'm going to let Antonio, who is one of our BAC members, is here, talk a little bit about that BAC process.
So thank you very much. I'm really, really honored to be here and have this opportunity as a people of color be sitting here in this table. So my name is Antonio Ramirez. I work for Latino Network as a leadership and integration program manager. And this was my first year that I participated with ONI BAC in the process of finding the ways to continue going to equity in our city. So as DCL partners, we believe that the wonderful work that the city of Portland is doing towards equity and the work that the ONI is doing towards the same goal is really, really important. Thanks to the support that we get from ONI, we are able to engage more and more people, Latino community, in the places where decisions are made. And I just want to say how appreciative we are for the support that we are getting from ONI, particularly myself as a first-year participant in the process. I really got wonderful support from Amalia, from Amy, from all the staff of ONI in order to be included in the process. So I just want to say thank you, and I am the living proof of equity's working in the city of Portland.
So this year, we had, of those 64 people that were engaged in the process, many of them potentially had competing interests. But in the end, the participants were once again unanimous in their support for the budget that we turned in and in their desire to see programs such as the East Portland Action Plan and the Diversity and Civic Leadership Program, Disability, and the Multnomah Youth Commission held harmless in our cut in our requested budget and our cuts this year. One of our major challenges has been addressing funding equity in our programs. There is inequity among the coalitions. For example, East Portland Neighborhood Office is serving a population that is now larger and more complex than when the funding was originally set for that program. Inequity also exists between our existing neighborhood system and the newer non-geographic partners or DCL partners. And so we prioritized cut and add packages using an equity lens to ensure that we weren't going to increase that inequity and make that gap larger. I also wanted to mention that we had developed a series of principles together with our commissioner at the beginning of our back process that talked about how we were going to approach what we were doing. And this set of principles was intended to carry forward to future years so that we did not have to keep repeating those. So very quickly, we acknowledged that our programs are not adequately funded. We continue to hold moving towards achieving equity as our highest priority. We talked about how we would not take money from one organization to fund another, that we would not increase the burden on our most underfunded partners, that we would try to safeguard individual people currently employed doing jobs as much as we could, that we would recognize that there are many organizations that are part of our system, such as Resolutions Northwest, Elders in Action, our disability and youth programs, and that those were going to be were not going to be disproportionately cut either. That we would not take cuts in ONI that were not shared by staff in other bureaus. So, for example, things like cutting COLA or reducing, taking furloughs or reducing salaries, we weren't going to do that unless the city looked at it as a citywide issue. That we would think about the whole system rather than only our own slice. And I'm really proud of the way that people on our back really did that. Many people advocated for other programs rather than advocating for their own. That we saw that more this year, perhaps, than in past years. So moving to the reduction packages, we had put in a request to consider, for the city to consider funding a couple of our programs through the overhead model, Disability and New Portlander specifically. This would have resulted in a savings to the general fund of about $156,000. The decision was not to accept those as overhead funded programs. That was the recommendation of the overhead committee. We respectfully disagree with the overhead committee and hope that we can continue this conversation. At this point in time, the New Portlanders program, their equity in practice program has worked with 10 bureaus, connecting them with newcomer community partnerships, providing services mostly in East Portland, such as mobile playgrounds, safe routes to school, community gardens, etc. The disability program has worked with 8 bureaus and some council offices on citywide policy and program issues. Both these programs actually also help us to meet our Title VI and Title II commitments. The savings that would have been generated from these programs being accepted as overhead funded would have resulted potentially in us being able to keep a crime prevention position, which has instead been recommended for cut. That position was going to focus on organizing within communities of color and other not groups that are not served sufficiently by more traditional public safety organizing methods. Given the police staffing challenges that are going on, this could be a double whammy for some of our communities, so I wanted to make sure and point that out. The reduction of our graffiti removal services eliminates over a third of the funding available for free removal services. Again, with recent staffing changes in police to the dedicated graffiti officers, we are concerned that Portland is reducing both cleanup and enforcement, which might make us a larger target for vandals in the future. Other priority ad packages that we put forward, there was a housing pilot engagement program. Mayor, I think you talked about YIMBY in your State of the City address, the Yes in My Backyard. Well, there's a growing movement among our community partners of people that really want to be part of the solution of this houselessness crisis. And so we put forth a proposal that was admittedly vague, but our partners are still working on coming up with the details for that proposal. We've talked with the Housing Bureau and met with them to talk about how we might complement and supplement the kind of outreach that they're doing to get information out as to how people can get engaged in becoming part of the solution. The proposal that we are working on, that our partners are working on, includes convening 6 major events, 50 small group meetings, all with facilitation from Resolutions Northwest. And their professional mediation skills, we hope, result in more meaningful community conversation and not just transfer of information. Community building grants to the tune of about $197,000 includes funding for 3 high priority programs, the Neighborhood Small Grants, which is a best practice. It's been added and taken and added and taken over the years. That was on the table for cuts, again, because it doesn't result in someone losing a job. There's also the Youth Action Grants, which give small amounts of money to local schools to work with their school communities on what their what violence issues are going on in their communities and how they can troubleshoot and become part of problem solving those issues for that specific school community. And then the New City Voices Grant, which offers smaller grants to diversity and civic leadership partners who are not currently funded. So those are smaller and emerging nonprofits and mutual assistance associations. In terms of staffing, we are priority staffing through the back and through our internal process, identified the public involvement best practices in youth development programs. The public involvement best practices position was the higher priority. It currently is serving one staff person, is serving 8 major bureaus, receiving significant support, citywide procedural and best practice model development with an emphasis on racial equity. So this particular staff coordinator was working with the CEC, has been very involved in the development of the city's equity goals, and working with the Title VI coordinator to develop a framework for implementation for community engagement focus goals, and is leading our racial equity roadmap process. And she is also staffing the development of policy recommendations through the Public Involvement Advisory Council. If we had a new staff person, that person would be able to focus on analyzing and developing improvements to our current city public notification policies and practices citywide, the development and implementation of improved digital engagement strategies, the assessment of our city boards and commissions composition, structure, function, and effectiveness, and the development of more racially equitable and effective public involvement practices in city bureaus. The Accessibility Fund for Only Programs was a fund that helped us pay for interpretation, translation, and childcare. This has been a critical component of EPAP's success, and they've been pushing the city to look at ways to do that citywide. We had that fund, lost that fund, and that was also put in our budget request, but not recommended. And I will leave it there if you have questions for us.
So I will briefly walk through CBO's recommendations. So the City Budget Office did recognize that the limited central administrative capacity of the Bureau as they have grown in complexity and size has become a significant challenge in keeping up with some of their core functions, and as a result have recommended some staffing increases to support their administrative functions. We recommended funding a management analyst in the Bureau's central administration to specifically address issues related to the administrative capacity around their grants funding, and particularly the City Budget Office was interested in this position also helping the Bureau and its partners work on their performance management ability to be able to better process and communicate the impacts of the investments for the important work that the Bureau and the and their partners are doing. We also recommended converting the mental health specialist position from a limited term position to an ongoing position. To date, that position in just a year has provided trainings for over 330 city employees on how to work with individuals with lived experience of mental illness, and has plans to expand their trainings for all city employees through City Learner. We recommended the administrative support position for the crime prevention program. That's the largest program within ONI. They currently have 12 program staff and a program manager that are located off-site, and they have no administrative capacity or capability currently. And the program manager oftentimes is the person who's answering the phones, answering the door, and it makes it very difficult for them to do the sort of strategic planning, the planning around performance metrics, and equity planning for that division. We are recommending that the Bureau fund internally, either through program carryovers or through increased revenues, the requested livability program office support specialist position on a one-time basis. So this is the position that was approved on a one-time basis during the fall supplemental budget to help the NOISE program, the liquor licensing program, with some of their administrative needs. So the plan is to use some internal sources to fund that position on a one-time basis while the Bureau considers their fee schedule for NOISE revenues to fund that position on an ongoing basis. And then we're recommending that the Bureau process a program carryover for the New Portlander. They requested a second position for the New Portlander program that was funded in the current year as a limited-term position, but it has not yet been hired. So CBO is recommending that we capture the savings from not having that person fill that position through this year and put that towards completing that position's role as it was originally scoped, and then reassessing the ongoing nature of that need next year. In terms of the reductions put forward by the Bureau, we did not recommend taking the community building grants, the $103,000 per community building grant program. That program will, in the current year, it's estimated to produce 53 grants. Prior grant cycles have resulted in 55% of the grants being awarded to projects addressing engagement with underrepresented communities. So we saw this as a big way to impact equity. Specifically, CBO also looked at this as a way to link the new management assistant position and their role in helping administer grants and work on performance metrics. Linking that, the recommendation for that position, to also this grant program to help work with the partners and ensure that we're again capturing the impact of these grants and of all the partner programs, not just on Bureau goals or partner goals, but also on citywide livability and equity goals. Happy to answer any other questions related to our...
I'll just ask some clarifying questions. Yeah. Obviously, I didn't understand the budget instructions, so I didn't load these correctly in terms of the reductions, so they were all lumped together.
Okay.
The three pieces of the 5% reduction that we were required to put forward were the one crime prevention position, the graffiti abatement funds, and the small grants. And of those, colleagues, the CBO is recommending not cutting the small amount for small grants, but cutting the crime prevention position and the graffiti abatement. So I just want to make sure that that's clear. I didn't understand, though, in the commentary you just gave us, Jessica, you mentioned several that you were recommending for one time. But in your recommendations, I'm only seeing ongoing recommendations. I don't see anything down there for one time.
So the one time are, we recommended that the Bureau process through the spring bump a program carryover of funds that they have currently in the current year and appropriated them towards next year's budget. So they will be available in next year's budget on a one-time basis through action that will be taken during the spring bump.
That's the only one. The others you are recommend, like the mental health specialist is recommended for ongoing funding.
That's correct.
Okay, and colleagues, I'll be coming back to you in the spring bump. Some of the money that's being suggested to be carried over has already been spent on the program that it's supposed to be spent on this year, so it's not available to be carried over. It's kind of unfortunate this is the end of a three-hour marathon session here, because I don't know about you, but my head is kind of spinning with all the different options here. So I'll let others ask questions, and then I'll come back.
So you're proposing to add four positions, or to save two and add two new positions funded through the overhead model. And I guess what's the rationale? I mean, every bureau would love to be funded through the overhead model, and some bureaus, in fact, like Equity and Human Rights and Bureau of Human Resources are, in fact, funded through the equity model. But this seems really as sort of throwing up your hands saying, we can't figure out how to do it any other way. Let's throw it in the overhead model. I don't see a clear rationale.
Sure. So my understanding is that when we fund programs through the overhead model, it's because they serve an internal purpose. So their purpose is to be the client, if you will, for that program are the internal city services and bureaus, as opposed to these programs being externally facing. Both these programs, disability and New Portlanders program, are internally facing. Right now, for example, the New Portlanders program is working with 10 city bureaus on best practices for engaging emerging communities in Portland. Portland's a gateway city. So that will only continue to grow as a need for us as a city in terms of how we best engage people who are new to the city, who may not speak English, who don't know how to connect with city services. Right now it's 10 bureaus, but it's open to any bureau who would like to access the service. We have staffing constraints, and so we haven't marketed it as we probably could with all our fellow bureaus, so the number could very well rise. Disability is the same. It's providing policy advice to city bureaus around meeting the ADA and around the transition plan. And so, again, clients are internal to the city and not externally facing. That's the reason why those two specific programs were put forward. We expect that the number of bureaus that engage with these programs are going to continue to grow.
So that's two of the four positions. Two of them are just simply your way of accounting for your cut.
They're all within this program. These two programs. These are the positions within these two programs.
My other question is, I mean, there's a lot of talk about best practices, and you have somebody already funded through the overhead program who staffs the Public Involvement Advisory Committee, which has been around for at least 10 years. I mean, 7 to 8 years. So I guess my point is, haven't we sort of exhausted all the best practices possibly out there for neighborhood involvement and take that person and put them on the New Portlanders program instead?
Yeah, there's actually a fairly long list. So the Public Involvement Advisory Council is made up of city staff and community people. And this group has generated a list of things that they still need to focus on. So for example, right now, there are questions about how to use new technology to engage community and government together, and what equity implications that has. So that's an entire arena that still needs to get looked at. We currently have a system of boards and commissions that we don't know enough about in terms of their composition and how they function. We hear anecdotally that people get engaged and then drop out because they don't feel like they understand what's happening, or that they're oriented properly, or that they have a voice or a say. So that's been something that's risen to the surface as something that we need to look at. We're investing city resources in sustaining the system. So find out how to make it work better. All those things take time and research. It takes a lot of sort of facilitation of people, all of whom have pieces of knowledge about these things. So there are a lot of things still that we need to improve in terms of the ways that the city engages with community in making its own program and budgeting decisions and policy decisions. So we don't feel like if it is a finite process, we don't feel like we've hit that place yet in terms of figuring out how to standardize so that people who want to get engaged with the city have a consistent experience of what it means to get engaged with the city, and that city staff have the support and the knowledge they need in order to properly be able to engage and effectively be able to engage the community.
And my last question, do you feel that position is more important than an additional position for the New Portlanders program?
So the New Portlanders program, when we were working with the mayor as our commissioner, the New Portlanders program proposed and the mayor's office agreed that they were to develop a commission to work citywide on policy issues. Again, Portland being a gateway city, we are only seeing increases in numbers of people that are coming in who are foreign-born. And so with the engagement of a commission to work as an advisor to city bureaus as well as council on policy issues regarding New Portlanders, there comes with it a request or a requirement for there to be a staff person who is able to do the research for this commission and help them develop policy recommendations that actually make some sense for council to implement. So it's a little bit of a Sophie's choice. It's very difficult to decide sort of which child you love more than the other or need more than the other. We're putting forward requests that support the programs that have been handed to us in the best way possible for you all to consider as you consider, the mayor considers putting forward his proposed budget, and then all of you consider having that discussion with the mayor.
This actually is not a comment for this year's budget, but it's something I've been meaning to ask about for years and just keep on forgetting, which is one of the complaints we hear periodically hear about the neighborhood association scheme is that the only people who show up at neighborhood associations are, you know, white homeowners over the age of 50. Now, I know that that's a stereotype that is probably not entirely accurate, but I think in some cases there might be a grain of truth. I was wondering if there might be a way to structure the budget for the neighborhood associations in a way that provides incentives for them to seek diversity. So to say, for example, that each neighborhood association demonstrate that the extent to which they are representative in terms of renters versus homeowners, whether they reflect the ethnic diversity of their actual neighborhood boundaries, et cetera, and frankly, give more money to neighborhood associations that are where the involvement is truly representative of the broader community and less to those where they're not.
I'm not going to touch that one. But as I do want to comment just very quickly on our fraternal twin here, and the majority of their work is outward facing. In their request, in their ad package for money for accessibility funds, my comment is just this. Last year, as CBO noted, we administered a $100,000 fund for translation, for interpretation services, for ADA compliance and accessibility. And that's a piece of what I'm understanding that Oni was wanting with this fund. My point is generally that bureaus need this money. All of the money we put out last year was gone. And I'm guessing it would all be the same this year. So I'm just suggesting that the city as an entity, council as an entity, needs to determine how or if there's an importance to setting aside a pot of money so that bureaus can tap into, because we're only getting more and more people who will need translation and interpretation services who are engaging with this city. And bureaus don't necessarily budget for that. And then there's a loss of ability to engage. So I just suggest that this isn't going to go away. It's only going to get more impactful and larger.
Commissioner Fish.
I want to stress what you just said. In fact, EPAP came forth with, because of the need for translation and interpretation, et cetera, that making it more of an administrative part of every budget, 1%, let's say, just throwing out a number, so they do it. One of the biggest complaints we get in East Portland, where we are predominantly, a lot of those immigrants are, is there's a couple of things with engagement, is they end up going to meetings, and that bureau, because they have to have a public meeting, can check it off, but there isn't anything translated for the minorities. You know, and most of the time it's just to give out information. It's not to seek input. In fact, often they feel that their input is totally ignored. So that's something as a city we need to always do. And it's not just the city. I know the school district ends up with some of these similar complaints. It's important that when you call it engagement, you're really engaging, not just putting out information. And a lot of these minorities aren't as vocal because they don't know how to be vocal. But the interpretation in East Portland, I kind of like your idea in the neighborhood, is in East Portland, because of the poverty level, EPAP has found that by providing food at a dinner time meeting and child care, as well as interpretation as